Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Wednesday, May 4th. It is 1:05 p.m. And I'm Senator Costello. We do have Senator Machicki, Senator Rivak, and Senator Gray Jackson here. I'd like to thank our recording secretary and the LAO operator for being here today. We have two items on the agenda, House Bill 227 and House Bill 132. We have the sponsor here for House Bill 227. It's the first hearing in the committee. We'll be having an introduction from Representative Shragi and his aide, and then we have some invited testimony, and then also we have a committee substitute that makes a minor change to the bill. So welcome, Representative Shragi. If you could place yourself on the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Senator Costello. It's great to be before your committee. Really appreciate you scheduling our bill for a hearing today. I'm Representative Shragi, representing District 25 in Anchorage, and House Bill 227 builds on some work done by a prior legislature back in 2017, approving a CPACE financing program in the state of Alaska. And what this program did, in essence, is it allowed for clean energy projects on commercial or industrial property to be financed using a new financing mechanism, where a municipality would act as a middleman between, a private developer with an industrial or commercial property and a private lender, using the municipal taxing authority as the means for encumbering the private developer and remitting payment to the financial institution through a voluntary property tax assessment on that property. So what it does is it allows that project to be put on the property, or that loan to be a lien on the property, paid through property taxes, then remitted to the financial institution. And the reason this is a beneficial program is it de-risks the investment for the financial institution, because they have a greater assurance that they're going to be repaid with that being a lien on the property. What this program does, or what House Bill 227 does, is it builds on that program and makes some improvements to it. Specifically, there were some financial requirements associated with the original program. However, when the municipality of Anchorage stood up the first CPACE program in Alaska, they found that some of those requirements were excessively cumbersome, to where they had a number of developers apply or pursue this program, work through the application process, and found out that it was just too restrictive. So this bill would remove some of those restrictions, then also expand these programs to not just clean energy, but also resiliency type programs. So things that improve stormwater management, fire resiliency, earthquake resiliency. If you're out in the Mat-Su or the Palmer area and you want to improve the wind resiliency of your building, those programs, those investments would qualify for this type of program and qualify for this financing mechanism, which ultimately provides a cheaper, lower cost of capital to developers, so that we can have greater investment, greater economic development in our communities. So very high level introduction there. I would point to some of the letters of support that you hopefully have in your packets. Notably, I'd note the Municipality of Anchorage and Mayor Dave Bronson, as well as AEDC, and a resolution from passed by the Mat-Su Assembly essentially indicating their intent to work with the Municipality of Anchorage to engage and enable this type of financing in the Mat-Su. With that, I'd be happy to take questions and or walk through a sectional if that's the chair's wish.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is thank you for being here the second time. This is the second time in here, just because I heard it in CNRA. And I really appreciated hearing it then and hearing it now. And so I'm going to ask the same questions that I asked in CNRA. And just to reemphasize what I think you said, the note is included in the property tax payments, correct?
That's correct, Senator Gray Jackson. So the way this works is the developer would apply for this financing program, and then once that lien is approved, it would be a voluntary property tax assessment. So an additional property tax on top of what you would already be paying, and that additional amount is then remitted to the financial institution, with a small cut being taken to reimburse for fees and costs associated with that program that are borne by the municipality.
Can I follow up, Madam Chair? Thank you.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you. And so you just said voluntarily. So if they don't want to use the process of paying their note through the property tax assessment, they don't have to. Is that what I'm hearing?
Senator Gray Jackson, through the chair, absolutely correct. You could, of course, always do a conventional loan or any other financing means that would be available to you. This just creates a new financing mechanism on the menu, shall we say, for a developer to choose from when looking at how to finance a given project.
Thank you. Madam Chair, just one more question, if I may.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so what kind of interest rates are we looking at when they use this program?
Senator Gray Jackson, through the chair, so I can't quote any specific interest rates, but what I will tell you is that from the testimony we've received from the financial institutions, from those that have utilized these programs in the past, from the program managers, is that what's attractive about this is that you typically get a longer financing term, and again, it's de-risked for the financial institution. So while I can't give you a specific rate, what I can say is that oftentimes financing through a program like this will get you a lower financing rate than whatever might be the standard on the market at that given time.
Thank you. That's good enough. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I see no further questions from committee members. If you'd like to have your aide walk us through the sectional, Ryan, please. Thank you.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, Ryan Johnson, staff to Representative Calvin Trage. So for our sectional analysis, there's quite a few areas that are similar because resiliency was just added to the existing program for CPACE, so I'll try and move quickly through those, just getting to the bulk of the bill. So sections 1 through 4 are all conforming with the addition of resiliency into the existing CPACE statutes. Section 5 adds new construction and resiliency projects to the possible projects for a municipal program. Currently, new construction is not allowed under the CPACE statutes, and then also adds a definition of resiliency projects for the section. Section 6, again, is a conforming addition of resiliency. Section 7 clarifies language allowing for the municipality to collect fees for the administration of the program. Sections 8 and 9 have conforming language again for resiliency, and then Section 9 adds capitalized interest reserves, escrow for prepaid property tax or insurance, and capitalized extended manufacturer warranty or maintenance agreement costs during the period of the assessment to the list of costs that can be repaid using the assessment. Section 10 amends the assessment maximum period from 20 years to 30 years. Section 11 amends the total financing for a project from 20% of the assessed value to now be the value of the property, or 25% of the market value of the property, so moving from assessed to market value. Section 12 adds language so that an assessment may repay financing for costs of a project completed within the past 2 years, to create a two-year look-back period for projects that have potentially missed the window for CPACE. Section 13 is a conforming change to add resiliency into CPACE statutes, and then also amends the ratio between the amount of the assessment and the value of the property to now use the market value of the property instead of the assessed value. Section 14 adds resiliency language again, and then also makes a technical change for the correction of days. Section 15 and Section 16, again, conforming language to add resiliency. Section 17 adds or a lien for an assessment to ensure that a lien on an assessment is not removed from a property in the case of a foreclosure. Again, as Representative Draghi said, the purpose of these liens is to remain with the property. So that was just clarified there. Sections 18, 19, and 20, again, are conforming language for the addition of resiliency. Section 21 adds to the definition section AS 2955-160 that finance and financing includes the refinancing of an existing project. That goes back to the two-year look-back window that has been put in the bill. Section 22, again, a conforming change to add resiliency. And then Section 23 repeals AS 2555-105-D1. And AS 2955-105-H, and I believe I provided the committee those two repealed sections. The first section was repealed because new construction has been added to the bill, and that previous section did not allow for new construction. And then the second section dealt with an exemption to go above the previous 25% of assessed value. So now that we're going to the market value, that exemption was no longer needed for assessed value. And then the current version of the bill, Section 24, repeals all statutes and references to CPACE. This was added in the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee. And then Section 25 added a new section to the uncodified law of Alaska. This new section would require any loan enabled under CPACE statutes before June 30th, 2052 to continue past the repeal date of June 30, 2052. This new section was to allow for a lender and property owner to convert a lien, or would have allowed, the new section also allows for a lender and property owner to convert a lien on a property to a conventional loan. Section 26 gives sections 24 and 25 an effective date of June 30, 2052. Both these sections were added in Senate Community and Regional Affairs. And then Section 27 gives the bill, except for sections 24 and 25, an immediate effective date.
Okay, thank you very much. I actually have three questions. And we do have some individuals online for questions, so I'm not sure who'd be appropriate. But I was curious if you could explain to the committee what kinds of projects, some examples of projects that have used this program. And then is there any opposition that you're aware of to the bill? And then using the market value versus the assessed value, does that mean that the property owner has to disclose the information that they haven't really previously been disclosing about the, you know, the sale price or something, you know, to that effect?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Costello. So I'll try to answer all three of those. So there's currently no programs or projects that have utilized this financing to date. There have been a number that have gone through the application process seeking this financing, but again, there were some cumbersome requirements as outlined in the sectional and some of those changes that were preventing those developers from being able to utilize the financing. So none to date, but hopefully with the passage of 227, we will have some developers utilizing this program. As far as examples of types of projects, you know, one of the proposals currently is the creation of a parking garage and being able to put in some electric vehicle charging stations. I know there's some other upgrades. Maybe my staff could speak to some other examples that have come up, and then I'll get back to answering your other questions.
For the record, Ryan Johnston. So, and to provide some context for Anchorage's CPACE program, mm-hmm. The initial statute was passed in 2017, and then the regulations for the program weren't adopted until 2019. And then Anchorage, the municipality, unfortunately got their program off the ground right in 2020. And we all can understand that 2020 might not have been the best year to try and start something new with COVID. So, but they currently have three applications, if I remember correctly, and from what we have heard from other areas that have used CPACE across the country, that in a first year, one to three applications is normal. So the municipality of Anchorage is confident that they are going to be able to continue to grow the program. And that's where this bill comes in, because of, as Representative Froggy said, the constraints that developers have found that they would like to have used CPACE, but because of what currently is allowed under the statute, they weren't really able to use that. So, but apologies, Madam Chair, the other kinds of projects, like if solar panels on a commercial building, you wanted to put those in, CPACE could be used for that. To have a system put in to better regulate your electrical output is also one that could be put in a property now using the existing statutes. And it's those kinds of things, but yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you.
And then Representative Shragi, for the record, just to continue answering your questions there, I'm not aware of any opposition to the bill to date, only letters of support. And I don't think we've received any communications in opposition to the bill. And then with respect to having to report the value of the property, no. Yes and no. If you were to apply for financing through this program with the municipality, you would need to report the value at that point to be, you know, as that is a requirement for the financing, just like you would have to report that value to a financial lender, because the municipality is going to be administering this program. I believe you would have to report it to actually be eligible for the program and be able to work through it. That said, this question did come up in Senate Community and Regional Affairs. You know, if you need to get an appraisal because you'd like to use market value, you don't have to automatically report that to the municipality. You could get that appraisal, look at the value of your property, and then decide, do I want to move forward with this financing mechanism, knowing that as part of that, I'll have to report that value of the property. But just because you got that appraisal doesn't mean that you would have to disclose that to the municipality. I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
Thank you, it does. Thank you very much. So while, you feel free to sit there while we have some invited testimony. We have Melanie Lucas Conwell with 49 SAF, who's on Teams, who'd like to testify. Melanie, if you could provide your name and affiliation and your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Melanie Lucas Conwell, along with Shana Kilcoyne, who is also on the line. I help manage the CPACE program out of the municipality of Anchorage for the past year. And it's been an honor to work on this program. Thank you for hearing this bill. And we hope that the amendments that have been passed will be under consideration from this committee given, and with the other public testimonies that are queued up, might provide additional information about the sunset clause in particular that is being proposed and how that might negatively impact the program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you being available today. Next, I would like to invite Shana Kilcoyne to provide any testimony.
Hello, my name is Shana Kilcoyne. I'm with the Municipality of Anchorage. Along with Melanie, we co-administer the Anchorage CPACE program. And is this an appropriate time to offer a slideshow, or is just this more informal testimony right now?
Feel free to offer a slideshow if you'd like.
I can do that, and you should have it available over there.
We'll take a brief at ease. Is it supposed to? Commerce Committee and Shana Kilcoyne, if you want to proceed, we have the PowerPoint now up before us.
Excellent, and I'll try to be brief because I think Representative Shockey did a great job at sharing what the gist of the program is. So I appreciate your time. For the record, Shana Kilcoyne with the Municipality of Anchorage. And what I wanted to talk about today was really Alaska's existing CPACE program, pretty briefly. CPACE on the national scale and HB 227 and what that means. So Property Assessed Clean Energy is an innovative financing program. It enables owners of commercial and industrial properties to obtain low-cost, long-term financing for efficiency and renewable energy projects, pay it back over time through a voluntary assessment on their property tax. Next slide, please. I just want to highlight some important properties of this program. First, businesses pay an administrative fee to participate, which is meant to offset the cost of the program operation and administration, so there's no cost to the taxpayer. This is voluntary. The tax assessing cities and boroughs can choose to opt in, and businesses can choose to participate. This is not a substitute tax credit or a tax incentive. All financing is private. And the municipality is really kind of a middleman helping to reduce the risk of the project and therefore activate projects and investment. So the security provided by the tax assessment is something that we're familiar with. This results in several good, compelling features, which I'll get to in a moment. And in turn, that strengthens the business case for investment in longer payback and deeper building retrofits beyond what we're typically seeing with traditional financing. We are aware of property owners with big projects that would like to apply if this bill passes, primarily for new construction, as Representative Shiraki mentioned. Next slide, please. So this is a government policy that says commercial clean energy projects are a public benefit, like a sewer or road extension. In the Matsu Borough, they use it for a natural gas changeover. It was allowed, as mentioned, in 2017 in statute, and the Alaska Energy coordinated a PACE advisory group to help get this program off the ground. They then received a grant from the Department of Energy, which allowed them to hire McKinley Research Group and PACE Financial Servicing. Those groups helped us do a program design and implementation and work on our administration. And we worked with the PACE Advisory Committee and other communities throughout the whole process. So we developed our handbook and documents to set the stage for really one program across the state. Next slide, please. So there are many reasons why CPACE is beneficial. Mostly that has to do with reducing risk. So I'll start at the 1 o'clock and move clockwise. First, this is a priority lien. Existing mortgage and lien holders have to consent to the assessment in writing as they're taking a subordinated lien position. Not all states require this, but we do, and that's fine. So if the mortgage holders don't consent, we don't have a project. I'll add that there are a lot of reasons to consent to the subordinated lien position, but mortgage holders are typically slow to get on board, and we are seeing that here. This is transferable, so it's tied to the property and not the owner, and that helps avoid an uncertainty barrier. So if a property owner doesn't know how long they're going to be in this building, they don't have to worry about it. If the building is sold, the loan goes with it. This reduces risk for the lender and borrower. This avoids an upfront cost barrier. A property owner can invest without money out of pocket. They can roll in hard and soft costs, and that can include the energy audit that's required, any engineering or permitting that has to be done. So even if they have cash, they can figure out the most advantageous purpose for that cash. It requires the project to pencil out. So per the statute, projects have to have a savings to investment ratio, or SIR, of at least one. So we need to know that the investments will pay for themselves on the savings on those energy bills. The projects are expected to be cash flow positive from day one, and they're structured so that those savings are greater than the loan payment. This is not required in every state, but we have it here. These projects increase our property values. Installing advanced technology and mechanisms improve operation and improve value. And lastly, CPACE reduces risk for lenders. It's because it's longer term, they can typically offer good interest rates, and that can help a project pencil out. By longer term, we currently allow 20 years or the length of the project, whichever is shorter. It's non-recourse, so the assessment is tied to the real asset, not the property owner or their assets. And I can't offer much more on what those rates are, but typically better than traditional financing or mezzanine debt. Next slide, please. To date, there are 37 states and Washington, D.C. that have enabled this CPACE legislation. So it might be innovative, but it's not a new concept for us. Nationwide, through commercial PACE, we've seen over $2 billion invested through over 2,500 commercial projects, creating 24,000 jobs. And those numbers are from 2020. And last year was really a banner year, so I expect that they're much higher now. This also means that we've had a lot of examples to look at throughout the development process. And in looking at those existing programs, I've seen that our legislation is some of the most restrictive in the country. Next slide, please. In Anchorage, as mentioned, we relaunched actually 2021, almost exactly a year ago. We've been in touch with Juneau, Sitka, the Kenai Borough, Matsu Borough, Fairbanks, and we'll say that the Matsu Borough passed their resolution of intent and their first ordinance to enable CPACE in February. And the Matsu Borough and Kenai Borough are actually kind of waiting to see what happens on HB 227 so that they wouldn't have to go back and redo their enabling legislation. And we really endeavored from the beginning to create one program statewide to avoid this patchwork of programs so that all these property owners, contractors, lenders would have to sift through it. So in creating the guideline for the Anchorage program, we were actually working to create a program handbook that's replicable statewide and will make it much easier for other communities to join on. Next slide, please. For us in the municipality or any jurisdiction that has PACE, as the administrator, our role is really to determine if the property owner, the property, and the project are eligible. However, don't think of these eligibility requirements as the protections for the property owner. Really, the property owner and the lender will still go through their full underwriting process, including looking at debt coverage ratio to determine their ability to pay. And at least in the near term, we're talking about projects that are most likely over $300,000. The first that we're looking at are in the millions of dollars. So these are sophisticated building owners going through the process. The eligibility requirements you'll see are pretty basic for property owner and property. And I'll point out here under the project that we have the savings to investment ratio, which I mentioned earlier. So over the life of the assessment, the projected savings must be more than the financed project. And the maximum financing amount, which Representative Schrage also mentioned, may not exceed 20% of the assessed value of the property at the time of application. These are two items in HB 227 that we hope to improve upon. Next slide, please. This is an example of eligible improvements. In terms of an eligible project, it means the installation or modification of permanent improvements that are intended to reduce energy consumption or demand, energy costs, or emissions affecting local air quality. So this is not an exhaustive list, just some examples. Next slide, please. We often get this question, so I wanted to address it. CPACE liens are prior and paramount to all liens except municipal tax liens and other special assessments. Like other special assessments, a lien for a delinquent CPACE assessment is on par with property taxes, and the municipality is responsible for reporting the benefit assessment once the application is complete and accepted. We would bill per the repayment schedule, much like a tax bill, and then we would process those payments from the borrower and remit the correct funds to the lender, keeping an administrative fee. Municipalities are not at any point guaranteeing the collection of those funds. So that means that in the event of a delinquency, the municipality follows its existing proceedings, and we're not required to pay the capital lender if the owner is delinquent. So then once that property is sold, the loan is sold with it, and the new owner would make any payments, pay any penalties and interests, or payments in arrears. And I'll note again that this is non-accelerating. So if there is a default, only the past due portion of the financing is senior to a mortgage lender's claim. And I'll add that there have been no foreclosures as a result of a delinquent CPACE assessment nationally. Next slide here. So a lot has changed in CPACE in the last 5 to 10 years. And this bill is based on those best practices and directly from project developers and lenders. We've done a very thorough investigation of other programs and spoken to many experts, including lenders, developers, project program managers in the lower 48. And we understand that many states recently have passed statutory changes or are working on them based on the way CPACE is really being used. So we believe that the amendments in HB 227 will bring us in line with the way it's being used in the lower 48. And I'll add that while we don't have a completed project, we have run into restrictions that are noted. And so we believe that as other boroughs and municipalities jump on board, it would be great if we could start with the best possible program rather than making changes down the line as the statute is updated. Next slide, please. Okay, so HB 227, probably the biggest piece here is that new construction is allowed in 25 state programs and comprised about half of CPACE transactions in the last 2 years. Texas, which our statute was replicated from, is working to include new construction as well. We have had multiple inquiries about new constructions for large projects, and this just offers developers more opportunities for financing beyond mezzanine debt. And what I really like about this is it facilitates more energy efficient buildings than we may otherwise have seen been constructed. And that reduces our energy costs and emissions for decades to come. And so I want to emphasize this point. I really see CPACE as being a fairly standard part of the capital stack for new construction. And that just means that we're building better quality buildings that cost less to operate. And this is in line with the intent of the legislation to reduce energy consumption costs or emissions affecting local air quality. Next slide, please. The bill includes resiliency projects that support public policy goals, and that includes seismic improvements, fire hardening, things like that. Our current market trends are pointing towards a growing use of CPACE financing for resiliency projects. And I'll remind you that we are talking about only non-residential buildings here. Impacts from weather, climate, earthquakes, and other disasters can often be mitigated by improving building resiliency, and that typically takes the form of retrofits that improve the envelope or systems of a building. And these types of projects can be a significant upfront cost for a property owner, but can also prevent major property damage during disasters like earthquakes and help our communities bounce back quicker from those natural disasters. Alaska, we believe, would benefit from the application of a pretty broad authorization of resiliency retrofits as are listed here. Individual jurisdictions would then have the ability to offer regionally relevant improvements. And these are examples that can all be found in the lower 48. I want to address that EVs and microgrids in here. We have seen them in other states, and EV infrastructure, for one, is a capital financing project which improves their property value. It fits within the original intent of the bill to reduce emissions and consumption and costs. And EV charging really doesn't include the actual, or it does not include the actual vehicles, just the charging units. And so it's essentially, we can think of it the same as solar. I'll add that Alaska is going to receive about $50 million over the next 5 years for EV charging infrastructure. So we see that EVs are definitely a part of our future. Next slide. Refinancing. This just allows us to refinance any CPACE assessment with an existing or a different capital provider, and provide a look-back period, which would allow eligible property owners who have already financed their projects to still use CPACE even if the project is complete. Next slide, please. And this Representative Shragi already talked about. I think he did a great job moving from assessment to a market value makes more sense as we take into account the actual value of the future structure. Next slide, please. Again, really quick, this would move the maximum length from 20 years to 30 years, which is more in line with the industry standard, and a lot of improvements can be can operate for well over 20 years. So this makes a lot of sense, and reduces the SIR removes the SIR requirements, which don't always include the full value of the improvements. And that is what I have for you. I think I forgot maybe to ask for next slides. No, it looks like we're good. Thank you. And if there are questions, I think Representative Shragi can help take those.
Thank you, Shana. I don't know. I guess my only question is, what does CPACE stand for? I was looking through the materials if someone wanted to share that.
I'll take that, Ryan.
For the record, Ryan Johnston, staff representative. It means commercial property assessed clean energy assessments.
Okay. Thank you very much. Great. So the only other individual online I see is Tom Benkert with who's from Anchorage. And Tom, if you could provide your name and affiliation for the record and any testimony, please.
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you for your time, for inviting me to this hearing. Yes, I'm with KI Energy, which is a local energy contractor located in Wasilla. We primarily provide combined heat and power energy, which is natural gas or propane fired, which is a far more cost-effective way of producing energy and heat. It's kind of like a generator where you get to use the heat off of it, and it's also capable of forming microgrids. So we have a vested interest in this. Our customer base is very interested in CPACE, and particularly some of the amendments that are offered here today in HB 227. I've been working on CPACE for, about 3 years now. So what I would like to say is that HB 227 is an amendment that's beneficial to existing law derived from HB 80, which Shana so succinctly explained. It serves to clarify, improve, and expand the eligible uses of CPACE and provides more flexibility and alternative finance programs for commercial buildings to improve building performance through upgrading energy measures, including alternative energy, energy efficiency, energy storage, et cetera, which lowers long-term utility and operating costs, increases the return on investment for capital, increases profits, and reduces pollution. The bill also supports microgrid development, which is important because Alaska has more microgrids and more microgrid opportunities than anywhere in America. Additionally, resiliency measures that have been added, such as building hardening against earthquakes, wind, wildfires, erosion, flooding, or whatever is appropriate for the particular jurisdiction that adopts the CPACE program, that is also a great improvement. The things that this amendment does to existing law in HB 80 is that it allows finance of, as I said, energy and resiliency measures to occur. Most importantly, for many of my clients, new construction, which was absent from the original law, there are a lot of projects that are looking forward to moving forward after COVID. They would like to have more modern energy infrastructure to be able to reduce their long-term operating costs, to have the ability to be blackout capable in event of earthquakes and windstorms and so forth. It also allows the refinance and recapitalization of eligible building improvements that have been done in the recent past, that they take that money and go do something else with it. It includes capitalized interest and interest reserves that are sometimes associated with the operation of commercial buildings. It allows escrows for prepaid capital, taxes, and insurance, which is important. You want to keep insurance coverage on your equipment, so if there's any kind of loss, then they can replace it. It also allows for the extended manufacturer's warranties and for long-term service maintenance agreements, which assures that the equipment installed or whatever the system that has been installed will continue to operate as intended into the future, which reduces risks and increases building performance. It allows the actual market value of the building to be used in the determination of the loan-to-value ratio rather than its assessed value, which is typically lower, which is really important, particularly in the situation of an extensive renovation of this distressed and undervalued property. That allows more capability for leveraging more finance to improve that property. And when I was working with the Energy Authority, we pulled all of the tax records from every taxing jurisdiction in the state, and it gave us an idea of the amount, value, size, and age of buildings. And the state has a rapidly aging building stock. In short, these energy improvements represent a long-term reduction in buildings, building owners' unavoidable utility costs by increasing cash flow, freeing up cash otherwise used to keep the lights on, so to speak, and increases net operating income. This is one of the reasons why lenders like CPACE so much, because a borrower with more cash in their pocket is a borrower who is more able to pay off their loan. So that reduces their risks, hence they're willing to extend these terms. Typically, they would make a loan for 5 years on any kind of the equipment that is used in an energy measure. So these eligible measures increase building's performance and increases building value, increases energy independence, lowers pollution, and increases building resiliency. Resiliency protects and reduces property damage risk to businesses and reduces business interruption and also very expensive repairs, which protects the building owner's long-term assets. So building owners have a lot of benefit derived from this for their long-term asset protection. Additionally, this is a good program for creating work and jobs in the state. It puts energy contractors to work, such as my company. It's good for businesses. It's good for local governments because it improves their building stock. It increases their economic activity. Reduces risks of, you know, buildings being shuttered and closed. For example, during the windstorm up in Wasilla, there's a lot of repairs being done there, a lot of business under construction and losses. And CPACE is one vehicle that building owners and businesses can use to help insulate themselves against that and lower those costs and risks. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate you giving such a thorough review of the bill for the committee here. Next, I'm going to ask that my committee aide, Katie McCall, come forward, and I'll make a motion to adopt the committee substitute. And then if Representative Shoggy, if you could just come back up and comment whether or not you support the committee substitute version.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Costello.
So I move Senate CS for House Bill number 227, Labor and Commerce version, Whiskey 32-LS1028, /Whiskey, before the committee. If someone would like to object for the sake of discussion.
I'll object, Madam Chair, for purpose of discussion.
Thank you. And Katie McCall, if you could please provide the committee members the changes in the committee substitute. Do all members have a copy? Okay, I'll take a brief at ease. Oh. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Katie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Katie McCall, staff to Senator Costello. So the committee substitute you have before you is version W, removes some sunset provisions that were amended into the bill. This comes at the request of the sponsor after some concerns were raised that the sunset provisions could create issues with the loan program. So in this committee substitute, from version G of the bill, it's removing sections 24, 25, and 26. So in version W, those provisions are removed.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further objection to the committee substitute? Okay, seeing none, we do now have the committee substitute before us. And if I could have the bill sponsor come forward and...
I will remove my objection, Madam Chair.
Representative Shoggy, if you could just place on the record your comments on the committee substitute.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Costello. Representative Shoggy, for the record, I do support the committee substitute. While well-intentioned, we received concerns from the municipality and other CPACE stakeholders that such a provision would make the program essentially unworkable, which brings us back to where we are today, where 227 wants to is designed to try and make this functional. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony on House Bill 227. Is there anyone online or in the room who wishes to testify? Okay, it looks like Tom Newkrantz with Global Pacific Capital calling in from Northern California. Tom, if you could provide your brief testimony, please.
Sure. Tom Newkrantz, CEO of Global Pacific Capital. First of all, thank you very much. We have experienced financing new construction, cost overrun, reimbursement for multifamily, senior living, hotel, mixed use, commercial, all using commercial PACE. We've done this in many states, and we're working closely with your great staff in Alaska. Our clients use CPACE, especially for ground up. So I love the fact that ground-up new construction is being included in this amendment. I think it's really important. From years ago, we used to finance just renovation, and today we're doing probably 90% ground-up. So it's a very important bill. I applaud you for making the amendments that you're doing. And we see our clients spend 100% of the capital that we can provide to finance energy reduction, to build renewable energy, to reduce the use of water, to seismically harden the buildings. So I'm simply calling in to say I applaud your efforts. It's very important. And we are kind of secretly, not so secretly, engaged in three or four projects in Anchorage right now and we really look forward to working closely with you. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Tom. Is there anyone else online or in the room that wishes to testify? Okay, I'll close public testimony on House Bill 227. Is there a motion to move the bill from committee?
Madam Chair, I have an amendment.
Okay, take a brief pass, please. You have an amendment. Back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We will be holding this bill for further consideration. Thank you for everyone who is online and in the room to testify. Next up, we have House Bill 132. It's the first hearing in Labor and Commerce. We have the bill sponsor here, Representative Fields and Grace Kubitz. If you could introduce yourself to the committee and provide testimony. I'm sorry, did I say the wrong bill number? I said House Bill 132.
That's correct.
Okay, because House Bill 30 is the one that's...
Right, it's a Labor and Commerce.
Oh, okay.
House Labor and Commerce bill.
Oh, okay. Got it. Thank you.
We're going to joint introduce him, then I'll just back out.
Oh, okay. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Before us now, we have House Bill 132, which is a House Labor and Commerce Committee bill, and we have the co-chairs here before us, Representative Shoggy and Representative Sponholz. If you could introduce yourself for the record and provide your introduction to the bill, please.
All right. Thank you for hearing House Bill 132, House Labor and Commerce Committee bill, which is also known as the Alaska Apprenticeship Expansion Act. This bill is a true collaboration and has been a process that has evolved through the committee process over the last months. Essentially, what the bill does is it strengthens collaboration between the Department of Labor and the Department of Education and Early Development so that we can ensure that Alaskans are able to maximize our opportunities for dual credit learning while both in school, in college, and in secondary school. And it positions Alaska to be able to expand access to apprenticeship model of learning, which is a great earn while you learn model of learning that is great for not only traditional trades, but also is being used in more frequently right now in the healthcare industry, which we know is a growth industry. And we know the rising costs of higher education mean that an earn while you learn model of apprenticeship is a great way to diversify our workforce and ensure that Alaskans are getting trained for this. The bill has changed quite a bit along the way, and I'll let my co-chair of the House Labor and Commerce Committee, Representative Zach Fields, talk in more detail about the bill. And of course, Grace Kubitz is available for a sectional analysis.
Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to be here. Zach Fields, House District 20. And after I go through the bill, in addition to my staff, Ken McCarty, who's a committee member who worked on a major provision of the bill, is here to talk about his language that's in the bill as well, if you want to hear that detail. So what's the background on apprenticeship and career and technical education? Alaska has high-performing apprenticeship programs in the traditional building trades, and also a lot of recent innovation with apprenticeship in new industries. And the concept of this bill is to support the continued expansion of apprenticeship beyond the traditional building trades. We know that school districts want to expand career and technical education, school-to-apprenticeship programs, other work-based learning, but they need support to meet demand. And when I say demand, I mean both demand from students and also demand from employers who are looking for skilled workers to enter jobs. Other states and nations have shown that we can do more to expand apprenticeship and career and technical education. And expansion of apprenticeship and CTE helps people pull themselves up by their bootstraps, get a good career, earn post-secondary credentials, without having student debt that would prevent them from advancing. Good state policy can also help position us to capture additional federal resources to promote apprenticeship and CTE. And that's a really positive thing as both the state and districts face pretty constrained budgets around CTE, and sadly over the last few years we've actually seen a lot of districts cut CTE because of inflation adjusted cuts to BSA. So I think we need to look at how do we position ourselves to capture additional federal dollars to support apprenticeship and CTE. So what does the bill do? One simple provision in statute that does not exist right now is a directive to Department of Labor and Workforce Development and Department of Education Early Development to collaborate in support of technical and financial support for school to apprenticeship programs and for CTE. At the most basic level, I think we should tell our departments what we want to achieve with our education and workforce development systems. The departments in practice have tried to do this, but we should provide them that statutory support and direction. This bill, because of the addition of language from House Bill 108 from Representative McCarty, also lowers the age at which youth can participate in workplace learning. And I'm going to let Representative McCarty go through more details on that, but I think it's an important provision of the bill that really strengthens the bill. The bill also supports the university system, providing credit, college credit, for apprenticeship and for CTE. It does that a couple of ways, by reporting back on credit from middle college programs and by supporting the university applying top college credit to existing apprenticeship programs. This is something that we have started to see in the state of Alaska. The Primary Care Association, for example, has apprenticeship programs where participants can currently earn college credit. It's very exciting because it opens college pathways for students and workers who cannot afford to go to college full time. So for people who have to work and support themselves, we open college career pathways, and that's very exciting. In addition, we support school districts who are offering concurrent vocational education training and on-the-job trade experience programs, again, with some language from Representative McCarty. We've heard a lot of support from employers and school districts throughout this process. I've listed some of the organizations here from a wide range of sectors, from construction, healthcare, and school districts as well. In the House Labor and Commerce Committee, we had a tax credit for apprenticeship. The tax credit was removed in the Senate Education Committee, so at this point the bill has no cost impact, and this committee is the final committee referral. To summarize, the bill supports employer participation in apprenticeship by ensuring that our secondary education system and the Department of Labor supporting apprenticeship in CTE. We encourage that collaboration across departments. We support our school districts. And we expand dual credit and post-secondary pathways. That's all for a summary. And again, thanks for the opportunity to present this bill with other committee members.
Thank you. And a very exciting bill. I'm very much in support of CTE, and at one point had thought about even merging the departments of workforce and labor development and Department of Education and Early Development, because one department gets children and youth ready to enter the workforce while the other department. And so I like the concept that you have here, and just was curious, do other states have this program? Where did the idea for this legislation come from?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Actually, part of the idea for this legislation came from a conversation Representative McCarty and I had when he was serving on the Mental Health Trust Board, around what we could do to support CTE and apprenticeship. Some of the concepts that you see in the bill came directly from CTE coordinators at the school district level. When we all took office 2 years ago, I reached out to CTE coordinators in Matsu, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau, who I worked with in the past, and asked them, what can we do to support apprenticeship in CTE? So you see some of those concepts here. And some of the concepts come from the Alaska Primary Care Association, which pioneered some very exciting healthcare apprenticeships statewide. They include distance delivered education. So we tried to look at, and by the way, those APCA programs have college credit attached to them. I would say they're very innovative and worthy of copying. So APCA's programs, which are in partnership with both the University of Alaska and Alaska Pacific University, provided some of the inspiration, and research that informed the bill was state and international best practices, including from Switzerland, Germany, and South Carolina, in terms of what other jurisdictions have done to support apprenticeship and CTE. So a lot of background went into the bill, but again, because our statutory foundation was slim to non-existent in terms of supporting apprenticeship and CTE across departments, we started at this basic level of statutes directing the departments to work together, and I think Representative McCarty's language on CTE and younger ages for participating in work-based learning really augmented that initial committee language.
Okay, and I thank you very much for that. Just for the sake of those online, we do have a continued floor session that we have to get back to, and it's my intention to adjourn the meeting at 2:15. So if we could have Representative McCarty come up, explain your participation in the effort here. We will open and close public testimony this afternoon and take invited testimony from three individuals who are either here in Juneau or online. So that's the plan. So appreciate the effort to kind of keep on time there. So welcome, Representative McCarty.
Hi, I'm Representative Ken McCarty from Eagle River, and with the 4 minutes I have, first of all, this is the Alaska Bill Bear. The idea, like Representative Fields said, on the plane flight from Juneau to Anchorage many years ago, and then talking to elementary kids, sixth graders, who said, what can I do to help you? And they said, help us get a good job quickly. And so this Bill Bear is like the Schoolhouse Rock. So when this is done, then all of you can sign it, and the governor signs it, the bear will go back to the kids at the school it originated from. So this concept here, we have the elements already in the state. It's bringing everything into synergy. So as an example, to do concurrent enrollment in college, we're doing that, but we're not doing concurrent enrollment in high school. So we're bringing the CTE so that they're getting credit, and they're getting certification credit that the industry recognizes, not just a piece of paper from a high school that means nothing in the industry. And so then the question is, like, where do we get our trained people to do that? And we have lots of people in our community that are industry masters, and we could give them an M certification. So this bill here has that provision that already exists that we could give them an M certification. They can come into the schools, or the schools will send the students to the facilities that are in the community there. So we, the state, don't have to buy a bunch of new equipment of such for each school. An example of this was Senator Bishop was telling me one time that he was in a community and they were wanting CTE, and he had Commissioner Ledoux with him, and he said, I think we already got you stuff. And they went to a back room, and there all that stuff existed, dust, cobwebs. And they said, well, we need an instructor. And so we could get you an M-certified peer person in the community. So it was all solved. So this is not something that we got to create from the beginning. It already exists. There's some provisions in it that have, like, a student at 14 can start the process if they want to go into a trade. And we could even start in middle school of kind of what would you like to be when you grow up, that discussion, rather than waiting till they're a senior in high school. And so at 14, they can start the process, but they can only do book learning 14 and 15. So currently, they can't really do on-the-job type training until 17. This bill will drop it down to 16. In addition to that, it adds an extra hour of on-the-job work. So because the midnight sun we have here, that just adds an extra hour, not adding a lot more, which we had tried several years ago, and it didn't work. And another piece of this is that, let's say that currently, if you work for your parents, that you don't have OSHA-type guidelines as much as if you worked outside. And so this extends extended family people. So you're all relatives, and I could work for my aunt over here in addition to my father over here in addition to, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it expands that. Also making a request to say, okay, what kind of OSHA type things exist so we could ask our federal delegates to, what they could do on the federal realm there. But what kind of things really limit our ability of training so people are on the job ready? And so that's what this is about. A motivation workforce right now needs workers. We have projects, as we know, that are coming down that they don't have workers. And a big theme is we want a worker that's going to be employed with us for the long run, not somebody that comes up and does a season in Alaska, they've been trained, and now they leave. And so they're looking to the high school students, say, what can we do to get them trained and trained right away? And so that motivation already exists in the workforce. As far as peers or students, that you get students that they're starting the process and maybe 16 or 17, they are making money and they have no expenses because they're living at home, mom and dad. And so what do? They go buy that truck or they buy that thing. And so now all of a sudden their peers are going, hey, I want in on that action. How do I do that? And so peer influence to promote the workforce and CTE programs. So it's a synergy of a lot of things. And as Representative Fields brought up, that it just expands that with different apprenticeship programs that exist too. But in this, everyone has a fair shake at getting into the workforce. And that's what this bill is all about.
Thank you very much, Representative McCarty. Appreciate your passion in this issue. I know we've talked about it, and I think it's pretty exciting. So thank you again for being here. I don't see any questions from the members. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
So in the 10 minutes we have left, we have three individuals who we have asked for invited testimony. The first is Ann Bilardi, who's the program coordinator with Department of Labor. And if you could mention who you are for the record and provide your testimony, please.
My name is Ann Bilardi. I'm the statewide apprenticeship coordinator for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I don't have any testimony, but I am available to answer questions.
Okay. I guess my question to you is, are you currently doing programs like this, and how does it change if this bill were to become law?
Well, we are currently working on some school-to-apprenticeship and pre-apprenticeship programs with various private employers and school districts. I've seen a lot of cooperation from the school districts. We've also working with Alaska Works Partnership, who is the youth grant apprenticeship holder for Alaska. We've reached out to various school districts to ascertain their level of interest in creating these kind of programs. So I think we do this already. I don't know that this is something that we have to be mandated to do. I think it's more in terms of finding school districts that are, that employers are in line with working with students in their district. I think that's a very important component of that.
Thank you, Ann. And where do parents and students find the information about the programs that exist currently?
Well, I think the only place they really exist right now is in the Fairbanks North Star School District. So this is something that we're working on.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate you answering that question. We also have Jared Kosen from the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. Welcome, Jared. If you could provide your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Jared Kosen. I'm the President and CEO of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. I'll keep this very brief. Our association has the privilege of representing all of Alaska's hospitals, nursing homes, home health and hospice agencies, and other key healthcare providers. The healthcare workforce is our association's top priority, and we strongly support House Bill 132. Like virtually all other industries, Alaska healthcare is facing a steep shortage in our workforce. Unfortunately, this is a longstanding problem that's coming to a head with burnout, and we expect it to be one of the biggest challenges for years to come. At a recent meeting I was at with my counterparts in the lower 48, we heard alarming national statistics showing that 18% of the national healthcare workforce has quit their jobs since 2020, and the reliance on temporary health staff grew by 33% since 2019. Unfortunately, we are experiencing these trends in Alaska. We have to fill over 6,300 healthcare openings each year alone to keep up with demand and account for worker exits. On top of this, Alaska's healthcare industry is projected to add or need over 5,000 new healthcare jobs over the next 10 years, which is more than any other sector in the state. Growing our own is the only way to meaningfully and sustainably get through this challenge. And this is why we support House Bill 132. Efforts to promote the creation, expansion, or operation of career and technical education programs, including pre-apprenticeship and school-to-apprenticeship programs, is the exact kind of approach we need to prepare Alaskans for professions in the healthcare field. Exposing younger Alaskans to real opportunity in healthcare is vital, and we believe HB 132 will help us advance this work. We urge the committee to pass House Bill 132, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Jared. Appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Missy Fraze, who's the Director of Career and Technical Education in Anchorage. Missy, if you could provide your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is, for the record, my name is Missy Fraze. I'm the Career and Technical Education Director for the Anchorage School District, and I will keep my testimony brief today. I am calling in support of HB 132, Career and Technical Education, as stated by Jared and others, is really vital to the economic prosperity of our state. Just like other states in the nation, we're grappling with workforce shortages. And one of the things that I appreciate about HB 132 is that it is really supporting innovation and opportunities to support growth and access to quality CTE programs, and through its iterations has really looked at creating processes to ensure integrity of programs and to look at ways that we can help students develop pathways, or school districts to develop pathways for students that are aligned to in-demand, high-skilled jobs. And 132 really does put the framework in place for our state to move in a positive direction. And we support the option for school districts to do that, as well as the stipulations around it. Thank you.
Thank you, Missy. And can you please comment on the changes in age in the bill? I see the effective date is July 1st, 2022. And will the school district be providing opportunities for 14-year-olds if this bill were to pass this session?
So our school district already has opportunities for career and technical education opportunities for students beginning in middle school. For us, we have exploration, and in those programs we have in middle school, we have job shadows, we have guest speakers. In our high school programs, we have internship opportunities for high school students who are in a career pathway. And those internship opportunities are turning into jobs for our students. And we know that having those opportunities, one, connects our students to our communities, because they can see opportunity, they can build a network here, and they see a career opportunity to stay here. So we're already doing this, and I don't think that those age changes really have a negative impact. I really think exposure and opportunity earlier is better for our students. You know, beginning in fifth grade, they're already deciding what they don't want to do in life. And so by lowering some of these requirements for ages, we're able to open opportunities sooner for students.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Missy. Appreciate you providing testimony on the bill. I'm now going to open public testimony on House Bill 132. Is there anyone in the room or online who wishes to provide testimony? Okay. Seeing none, I will close public testimony on House Bill 132, and we will be holding this bill for further consideration, working on an amendment. I think that the sponsor is aware that we are working on. So. With that, this concludes our afternoon's meeting. Our next meeting will be Friday, May 6th at 1:30 p.m., and it is now 2:14, and we are adjourned.